Hey everyone, it is Clay. I just wanted to let you know that if you are interested in following any of my work outside of this podcast, that is my comic book and artwork work, you can now do so over at patreon.com/claymac, which will cover all of the things that I do professionally, my musings about comic books and art in general and illustration. So if you're interested, come over and check it out. It's patreon.com/claymac, C-L-A-Y-M-A-C-K. Thank you guys for your continued support, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast, where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm good. I recently met someone very interesting in the tall trees.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Don't tell your husband.
Not that kind of somebody.
Okay, just saying. We are talking about a movie today, which is Amanda's wild card pick.
Yes.
This is a real double-edged sword for listener Kyle.
Oh, really?
Who was begging to have you get another wild card pick because it seemed like so long, and then I just had an iron-fisted grip on the movies you're watching. But he also said he's not a huge fan of this one. So
I let him down.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Careful what you wish for,
my
Kyle.
My favorite hobby, letting men down.
Amanda, what is your movie pick?
My movie pick is Late Night with the Devil.
Yes. And there is a reason why this has to be a wild card pick, which we will get into at the end of the episode. Yeah. Much like a TV show, we're teasing out the juiciest bits of news for the for the end of the episode.
I don't know if that's true, but
we have a major list change.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the first year I've actually read the preamble to the list and discovered that they do annually reshuffle things every October. But I think they do it more frequently than that.
I think they do too.
But October, I guess, is when they do the big,
like a big overhaul,
the big reorg.
Yeah.
And much like a reorg at a business, many people lost their jobs and their spots on the list. And this movie, as of the last time we checked in the list, was on the list.
Yes.
It is now gone from the list. So we'll be giving you an update on that. And it's really, it's a really bonkers change. Like every,
we live in a strange new world now.
Yeah, I can give you a little bit of an insight. I think every single movie has changed. Every movie we have covered has moved.
Great.
Except for Get Out, which for some reason has only moved once in the 5 or 6 years we've been doing this. But
they've just really dedicated that spot
apparently
to Get Out.
Anyway, we'll get to that later. Late Night with the Devil, which is from 2023?
Three?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me.
I think it's three.
Have I told my Late Night with the Devil story on this show before?
I mean, maybe, but also this is the episode to definitely tell it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to hear it again.
Yeah.
it's not on our list, but just to really lean into how ridiculous our list is, this has a 97% Rotten Tomatoes score with an 82% audience score.
I'm honestly surprised it's that high.
Yeah, so
as someone who, spoiler alert, really likes this movie,
I'm
still really surprised it's that high.
This is a perfect example of, I understand why the reviews when it came out got it on the list, but I could see it dropping off
yeah.
as things kind of even out.
Sure.
But this is still has 97.82.
Yeah.
Which is higher than...
A lot of the things currently on the list.
A lot of the things on the list.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. you had seen this before, obviously, because this
yes,
was
I
your pick.
Yes.
All right, moving on.
Yep.
did you see it? You didn't see it in the theater, right?
No. I can't remember when it was out in the theater. I might have been in South America. I don't remember.
Mm.
Yeah,
I don't remember exactly either.
Yeah, high probability I was. No, I saw it because it's a Shudder movie.
Mejor so. Noche con el Diablo.
Yeah.
No, that's not. It's a
big night with the devil.
It still works, I think.
No, when it came out on streaming on Shudder, it was one of the rare movies that my husband actually wanted to watch with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the general conceit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember really liking it. I think it is a really fun twist on the sort of found footage genre. And it mm-hmm. is really fun as a period piece. Like, it pulls a bunch of different things from the 70s and early 80s together that I'm not sure I've ever seen all in one movie this way.
Yes.
And I thought David Dastmalchian was great.
Yeah. I think... That's going to be one of the things I think we talk about is how to actually classify this movie
mm-hmm.
because it wears all of its influences on its sleeve
mm-hmm.
and kind of prevents it from being pigeonholed as a specific type of yeah. movie.
Yeah.
Excuse me. For better or worse, I would say, but we can get into that
sure.
as we go. I was one of the... I'm going to say 10 people who saw this in the theater. I went to see this at, this is the benefits of working from home and kind of making your own schedule.
Mm.
I went to see this at 2:00 in the afternoon on like a Wednesday.
Nice.
In Boston. And it was a really overall eye-opening experience. Mm. Not just the movie, just the whole experience of going to see it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought mm-hmm. it was very fun. I was one of, excuse me, 4 people in the theater.
Nice.
There were all of whom were definitely over 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
2 guys behind me, 1 guy like way up front in front of me. And after the movie was over, the 2 guys behind me got up and they left. And I was mm-hmm. kind of sitting there watching the credits.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice as they start to leave, the guy in front of me starts talking to them.
Oh, boy.
And they kind of, you know, brush him off. And I can kind of, you know, there's a certain thing. I don't think this is just a Boston thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is anywhere that has a very identifiable accent or patois, you might say.
Sure.
But, you know. There's a certain distance of earshot where you can't hear the words, but you can hear the accent.
Yes.
And I could hear the accent.
Yeah.
And it was thick.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly the kind of guy I was dealing with.
Oh, yeah.
And so I get up and I go to leave and I kind of, you know, try to move past this guy as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And as I'm going by, he goes, hey, can I talk to you for a second?
Oh, boy.
Like, yeah. Hey, what's up? And he was it was like, I thought he was a plant, like an industry plant because of how stereotypically Boston he was dressed.
Oh, my God.
Like he was literally wearing he looked like he was from the House of Pain jump around
Hello,
video.
Fellow teens.
Yeah. He's wearing a Celtics jersey and he's got the chain. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. Clearly didn't have a job. And he's like, he goes, Did you like that movie? And I said, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And he goes, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really, really good. I'm like, it was a lot of fun. He's like, I didn't really know anything about it, but I really like that actor. I'm a big fan of his. So I wanted to make sure I saw it. And, you know, it was great. I'm like, I had a good time.
Fun movie.
I'm not really a horror movie guy, but like,
oh my God.
This, you know, Child's Play 2.
Oh.
And, you know, like.
Fuck yes.
Scream. Like, top 3. Top 3 for me. I'm like, that's awesome, man.
Oh, man.
And I kind of got that feeling where it's like you start talking to a new person
and
you're being polite, but you can see the next question starting to simmer behind the eyes.
Yep.
And it's something, it's going to be something along the lines of, you want to go get a beer?
Yeah. Yeah, we're friends now.
Yeah. So I didn't let it get to that point. Yeah. He seemed like a very nice guy. I'm very happy. The takeaway from this was huge David Dastmalchian fan.
Great.
It's good to know that those people are out
there. Glad
to
know he has them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other thing he said was, after he said, you know, I'm not really a big horror guy, I think he said, I think I'm going to have to start watching more of these. Because that was really good.
And also great.
Also great.
Yep.
Great to hear.
Yep.
Doesn't seem to be an industry plant, so that was nice. It's nice. It's nice to know that movies still can affect people that way. Now, the second half of this journey. I'm walking out.
Yep.
This is the movie theater over by the TD Garden. Right.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
Right before the pandemic.
That, like, fancy new one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Before the pandemic, it was an arc light. And I was kind of excited because, like,
what is it now?
It is now an AMC.
Oh.
I was like, oh, arc light. That's cool. They don't have those over here. I mean, it's going to be expensive as hell because of where it is, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't realize that it had turned into an AMC. And so, thinking this is a totally normal thing to do, I walk up to the people who work there and I'm like, hey, so wasn't this an arc light? When did it turn? And they kind of gave me the rundown of, like, yeah, it was the it was going to open and the pandemic hit and then they couldn't open. And so they put, and I was like, oh, yeah. So is it doing well? Like, you guys, are you doing good business? And he's like, oh, you know, you have the weekends are good. I'm like, okay, that's great. You know, because I can't believe I actually said this stuff. But I was like, it's really good to see, to hear that there's theaters that are, you know, still doing well. And so I start to leave. And in that moment, I realize what I have become.
Yes. Everyone's weird uncle.
The 40 year old man going to the movies in the middle of the day on a weekday and then asking the teenager, putting popcorn into a bucket, cleaning out the Dune popcorn hole.
Yep.
How the business is at the AMC. So
I really wish the guy from the theater with you, who was in his Celtics jersey, had popped up at that moment to say to you, we're not so different, you and I.
I know. He probably would have been like, man, I thought you were cool, but nope. Nope.
Talking to the teenage employees.
Offer rescinded.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my experience.
Oh, that's great.
Seeing this movie.
I love that.
We are going to take a quick break, play the trailer, and come back and talk about it.
We are back in 5, 4. Now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Darrow.
Oh, good evening, Night Owls, and thank you for allowing me into your living rooms once again.
Night Owls, we've got a heck of a show in store for you tonight, and I'm very excited for you to see it all unfold before your very eyes. I really hope you love it. Gosh, I hope you love it. Please love it. Love it.
I'm trying to host a nationally syndicated talk show.
And I'm trying to help you keep it on the air.
We all know how important it is to keep our sponsors and affiliates happy, but in my humble opinion, there is only one person who really matters in this whole darn crazy business. And that is you, our viewer.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. She's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do what? TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first, as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Good to see you again, Jack.
Lily, return to me.
This
this isn't about ratings anymore.
No one's going anywhere.
How could you let it happen, Jack? How could you let it happen?
Please be warned, anyone with young children in the room. You're about to see.
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking. You get out there, Mr. Midnight. And you knock him dead.
Okay. Late Night with the Devil. The problem with this movie is that every time I hear this title, I immediately think of the Spinal Tap song Christmas with the Devil, and it just gets stuck in my head. So
that's fun.
Yeah. Anyway, Late Night with the Devil, directed, written and directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns. Excuse me. Starring Polka Dot Man from Suicide Squad.
Yay.
And the weird, creepy guy. See, I think I appreciate that there is still room for someone like David Dastmalchian to make a career solely based on being fucking weird.
Yes.
Because, like, the first thing I ever saw him in was The Dark Knight.
Same.
And he's one of the Joker's weird
guys. Yeah, he's the giggling one.
Yeah. And, like, ever since that, anytime he pops up, I'm like, oh, it's the weird guy from Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And he's so very uniquely weird.
Yes.
He's got, like, Peter Lorre face or something. But
it's great.
It's great to see him doing well.
Yeah.
And getting a solid fan base that comes out for his movies.
He also does seem like a genuinely nice dude.
Yeah. I
like
know
every
he
interview
has...
I've ever, like, I know he was on The Last Drive-In and he's, you know, done a bunch of different stuff. And every interview I've ever heard him, and he just sounds like a really nice guy.
Yeah. I know he's got kind of a wild story where he was, I think, pretty badly addicted to drugs for a while.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because I happened to come across, I don't know if it was on YouTube or something, but they were dedicating like a new rehab center or something in Chicago where I think he's from. And he was there to help open it. And he told his story about how he had, either when he went to Chicago or he went to LA and he ended up falling into drugs and, you know, his career wasn't going very well and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But, he managed to pull himself out of it and, you know, good for him.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Polka Dot Man from Suicide Squad, Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss, Faisal Bazzi, Ingrid Torelli, Rhys Autieri, Georgina Haig, Steve Muzakis, and the velvety, velvety voice of Michael Ironsides. Amanda, what happens in Late Night with the Devil?
A live television broadcast in 1977 goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms.
Nobody saw it, though, because everybody was out seeing Star Wars.
Oh, boo.
Standing in line for Star Wars.
Boo. Yeah. Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Late Night with the Devil include so many production studios.
It might be a record. Like there's like 10 different production studios.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to be too petty about this, but these guys got to get better logos. Like there's, you think about the
that
classic.
That is pretty petty.
I know. You think about the classic days of the film studio logo, your Universals. Your 20th Century Fox fanfares.
We can't all torment a lion, okay?
Your TriStar Entertainment Pegasus. Very classy, very memorable. These ones were all garbage. So do better.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. A psychic collect call from a ghost.
Yeah. They.
Will you accept, Clay?
Yes.
Will you accept?
Yes. Yeah, that's fun. I've never seen that before where there actually is, there needs to be a acceptance on the other side,
yeah,
so to speak.
I really look forward to talking about how Christu works or does not work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean narratively, I mean practically in the movie. Unfortunate CGI.
I give this movie generally a bit of a grade this on a curve a bit.
Sure.
Because I think it's very inventive for what it is and the budget that it had.
Yes.
The few times that they use CGI really bums me out.
Yeah.
Because the key to this kind of thing working is maintaining the aesthetic and making it feel as real as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I guess the most egregious time is when Christu starts puking everywhere.
Yeah, that and Madeline's ghost.
Yeah,
and the, isn't great.
The electric effects and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just the puking. People have been doing puking.
That one for
100 yeah. years.
There's a couple of them that feel like unforced errors, yeah. right? Like if you wanted the electricity effects, I on the budget they had, I don't know how else you really do it.
Right, yeah.
But the stuff with like Madeline's ghost and the stuff with Christu, it's like you guys could have just dialed especially it back when, a little bit and had it look more practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when they do the great stuff with the worms later. And that's yes. all practical
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, to go along with your unfortunate CGI, we also have unfortunate artificial intelligence.
Yeah, there was a bit of a small controversy when this came out.
A
because
kerfuffle, one
a
might
kerfuffle,
say.
Yes. Because the filmmakers said that they had used AI to create some of the images in the movie.
Mm.
And it is the commercial card, I don't know.
Yeah, like interstitial cards
yeah,
or something?
Or like the yeah. skeleton where it says, we'll be right back.
Yeah,
or the TV.
That bummed me out when you told me that. Because I really, obviously you only get a glimpse of it for a few seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's cute. I would love that on like a t-shirt. And apparently if you look closer at it, it doesn't look great.
Yeah, the skeleton specifically, the giveaway obviously mm-hmm. with these things is for some reason. And it's, it's hard. As someone who draws for a living, I will say hands are very difficult, and AI has not figured it out, or at least it didn't back then.
Yeah,
it's his hands are all fucked up, and the TV is kind of wonky if you look at it, and it's I want to give them a bit of a pass only because I think it was early enough that I don't think people really were totally conscious of what this stuff actually was.
Yeah,
but you know. I don't know. So much of the other stuff in the movie is so good. I don't know why you need AI to make a couple illustrations.
Yeah. A gift from Charles Laughton.
Yeah. I always love it when you have a character who just pulls a random actor's name out of a hat. And Charles Laughton
name drops a random ass person. Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Carmichael.
When Carmichael he gets Hague, yeah.
vomit on his jacket, he's like, this was a gift from Charles Laughton.
Yes.
Charles Laughton is an actor. He's the director. He directed one movie, which was Night of the Hunter.
Oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Got
so
it.
He's more well known as an actor, but he stepped up to the plate, hit it out of the park, and was like, "Can't get better than this."
Yeah,
so they just
walking
stopped.
Away. Yeah,
yeah. It's a great reference for that character.
Yes,
because. That guy's a little bit Amazing Randy and a little bit Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great reference for the Orson Welles side of things.
Yeah, yeah. To go with that comment, quote unquote, spouting.
Yes. I don't know if that's a technical term.
Says that it is, but I don't know how true that is. The beauty of 80s paperback covers.
Yeah, that was the book, legitimately terrifying cover.
Yes.
That's a really good cover for that
it
book.
It really made me miss old school 70s, 80s, early 90s book cover art
mm-hmm.
and how absolutely unhinged so much
oh, yeah.
of it was.
Yeah.
Just all everything was like an acid trip fever dream.
Mm-hmm.
I miss it.
It was the golden era of illustration where you could just do crazy shit,
weird shit.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, sometimes I think about how different publishing is now.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Especially when I think about the comic book industry, how in the 90s, if your book was selling less than 100,000 copies, they would cancel your book because it wasn't selling enough copies. And
if there are
like maybe 5 books that sell 100,000 copies these days,
yeah, that's. Feels like crazy numbers now.
Yeah. And there was a specific reason I brought that up, and I just forgot what it was. What were we talking
covers?
About? Covers, yes. the best barometer or signifier to me of how people were buying literally anything in comic book form is there was a comic book called Punisher Armory.
Okay.
It was a Marvel comic about with the character, the Punisher.
Sure.
The entire book, it was like, it was either like 4 or 6 issues. It was just technical drawings of guns. It's fucking great. Like, they are, it's really good
drawings.
No,
I'm sure it's extremely detailed.
Yeah.
And
but it's like, there's no It's not. It's not a story. Yeah. It's just 22
and everyone
pages.
Was like, I will buy two of them.
Yeah, 22 pages of Uzi drawings, and it, like, yeah, this
back then, that's the only place you could get them.
200,000 copies.
Yeah. You'll also find the good old days of the Halloween special.
Yeah. One of the things that's fallen away in the advent of streaming, for some reason, because you'd think it would be easier to do now.
Yeah.
But I always love the Halloween special.
Same.
Yeah, especially those weird sitcoms where, for whatever reason, they would do the scariest shit you've ever seen.
Yes.
For one episode.
Yes. Yeah, that's always the best. We're going to discard the normal timeline, mm-hmm. and we're going to do the Halloween special, and then next week we'll be back to normal. Mm-hmm. Like, this never happened.
Yeah.
I always loved that shit.
I feel like every generation has their one episode of a show that they as a unit will look to as like, that was it. That was the scary one. Mine is the Punky Brewster episode. I don't know if that's specifically a Halloween episode, but it's fucking,
I don't know if it is.
Where they go into the cave. And there's like
we definitely watched it on Halloween one
Native
year.
American ghosts and like giant spiders. It's fucking scary. Anyway,
you'll also find the first Church of Abraxas.
Yeah, there's a bunch of Abraxas references that are just kind of peppered in the background, like even before the movie really starts getting going.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the first magazine cover they show of Jack, there's like a normal headline, and then the headline beneath it says like "Hail Abraxas" or something. Yeah. So.
Even before that, in the opening montage of like society in chaos, they intercut a bunch of the high priest,
mm-hmm.
like sneak a few frames.
We get it.
There.
You paid more attention than I did.
You'll also find demon job hierarchy.
One of my favorite things is when they get into, not just in this movie, in general.
Like, yes, the Dark Lord Abraxas.
Yes.
And then beneath him is Chet, the annoying.
Yeah, and it's always like, well, Abraxas, he's like the head demon. Like, well, actually, he's a sub-demon who answers to a council of other demons.
Yeah.
Like, is there like a time sheet or something, or some sort of, is there like a...
A demon org chart?
Yeah. Is there like a ZipRecruiter file that I can look at or posting if I want to get in on the ground floor of
this? I'm sure there's something in like the Gnostic Gospels.
Yeah. I appreciate that there was at least one person, one monk somewhere who was like, I just don't feel like writing about this anymore. You know what I'm going to do? I got to write something.
Yeah.
I gotta earn my keep.
I'm so tired of getting the demons confused.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make a chart.
Yeah.
I'm just going to start like they do in genealogy.
D&D reference guide to these these demons so everyone else knows who to reference when they need it.
You'll also find Amanda's coffee table decor.
Yep. Skulls, knives.
Yeah, the usual.
Usual.
Gotta have them. these two go together. You'll have to guess as the listener which one I suggested and which one Clay did. Poor Gus just doing his best, or a goddamn shit your pants Mick asshole.
Mm.
And last but certainly not least, baby shy Halud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just coming right out of his face.
Yep.
No, the bucket and his face.
Yeah, he pops an eye out.
Yeah.
Bursts out of poor Gus's head.
I hate when that happens. Okay. Late night with the devil. The impetus for this, the writer and directors said, was in the 70s and 80s, there was something slightly dangerous about late night TV. Talk shows in particular were a window into some strange adult world. We thought combining that charged live-to-air atmosphere with the supernatural could make for a uniquely frightening film experience. So this is an interesting movie because it is not... I don't think this is unique in what it's trying to do, because there are other things that have tapped into this previously. There's a great one that I really like that is it. So just to back up slightly, my biggest issue with this is I don't think they commit to the bit through the whole movie.
Sure.
And because I think you get to a point where it's like, well, we got to end this. What the hell do we do? And so, but we can talk about it in a bit.
Okay.
But there's another one that I really liked. It's called the WNUF Halloween Special.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, but yeah. I've seen it when I've been scrolling,
yeah.
But I have not stopped to watch it yet.
That's one that completely commits to the bit, yeah. Down to it has local commercials that they made in between the in the ad breaks for this local news Halloween special they're doing.
Yeah.
But this kind of thing, even before that, this idea is not new. There's an episode of Tales from the Crypt where they do this, also a very good episode of Tales from the Crypt. They don't, and of course I think I would say probably the first ancestor of this is probably Ghost Watch, which is also very cool. Highly recommend that. It pops up online from time to time. It's usually, it shows up on Shudder like once or twice a year.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it on there. Yeah.
But yeah, what is interesting about this one is I think they do a really good job of synthesizing a lot of different influences into something that I think works pretty well for the most part.
Yep.
It's the way that they put everything together is really fun.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of pull out the references, but it's never a specific, it's never a singular thing. It's always like a couple things mixed together.
Yeah, yeah. Like there are real life analogs to a bunch of the background things and the sort of quick one-off or two-off references to actual bits of sort of supernatural lore or conspiracy theory. And they throw it in there and they let you pull from it if you know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, you can kind of extrapolate. Right. From the rest of the trappings of the movie. Like, oh, if they're talking about the Grove, like a lot of people might watch this movie and not realize that this is a very obvious and heavy handed reference to Bohemian.
Dragnet.
Bohemian.
The Dragnet movie where they're all dressed like goats.
No.
Agree to disagree. No, I know what you're talking
Bohemian
about.
Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian Man.
Yeah.
My introduction to Bohemian Grove was Alex Jones.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Because that was the first, and that was also my introduction to Alex Jones. Because someone was pointing me to this stuff to see how ridiculous this was. Bohemian Grove, for anyone who doesn't know, is like a it's basically like a summer camp for the richest people in the world.
Yes.
And
it is a highly exclusive private club.
Yeah.
Where like for a couple weeks a year, a bunch of the extremely rich and powerful men of our world get together and do weird shit in the woods.
Yeah, I like that your explanation was a lot more sinister than mine was. Yeah. But yeah, like part of that includes some sort of goofy ass fake pagan ritual or whatever.
Oh yeah, it's a glorified frat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Alex Jones got like so much mileage out of this is where they meet to do their black magic and stuff. Like all of the things implied in this movie, he was implying for real in real life.
Yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy around it because it is so private and the people who go there don't talk about what happens and there's no like footage. You know what I mean? Like so it's that exclusivity that makes people just have all the room to speculate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing he tried to like break in there. And I can't remember if he did it.
Jesus Christ.
He did it when there was like nobody was there. So it's like he got onto the property and he's like, as you can see, these are the cabins where people stay. Yeah. They probably do their rituals inside the cabins.
Oh my God.
It's one of those things that, like most of this stuff in real life, is not so much sinister as much as just lame and kind of silly.
Yeah.
I don't think they're sacrificing babies there.
No.
They're just getting
shit-faced. I do think they're strategizing and they're making deals.
Probably, yeah.
To make more money and to do things to prop each other, you know, prop each other up. Like, I'll do this for you, but then you have to do this for me.
Yeah. I think it's similar to like the mystery around like the Skull and Bones group from Yale or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
But yeah, so how? So this was your pick. Tell us what you love about this movie.
I mean, I will say flat out, I do love the aesthetics.
Yep.
Just the look and feel of it is so fun. I know a lot of people don't. I feel like the general vibe I get is that there are very mixed feelings about the way this movie plays out, where it's kind of set up at the beginning like it's a found footage thing. Not really. I mean, it's not found footage in the sense of like it's not somebody's like handheld camcorder. It's clearly a professional studio. But it cuts between the on-air segments in color that are very much shot like on-air segments, and then the black and white during the commercial breaks, where you get to see a lot of the behind the scenes of them bickering or them changing the set and people getting their makeup done and arguments happening and things. And I think there is a lot of like people who get annoyed that it doesn't fully commit to the found footage bit.
I'm sitting right here.
Are you one of those people?
No, it's not the found footage. The thing that I don't know it. I don't mind it as much as I did the first, like, because the first time I watched it, you're kind of like taking everything in, and I felt like at a certain point there was nowhere left for them to go with this, late night TV show from the 70s thing, and then it just turns into a regular movie. You know, because then like it goes widescreen, and it starts, and like they keep the aesthetic of the images, but they just drop the whole like onstage video camera kind of thing. And I think that's kind of a take it or leave it thing for me, where it doesn't bother me because I think it's fun how they wrap the story up. But it did feel to me like they were kind of like, all right, how the hell do we get out of this?
Demons.
Yeah.
That's how. But I don't know. I really like this movie because I do think it's creative and I do think it's doing a really great job of hearkening back to a certain time and a certain type of TV show that doesn't fully exist anymore. I know we have late night, but it doesn't feel this way anymore.
Yeah. That quote from them at the beginning is maybe a little hyperbolic, but I do understand what they're talking about, because there was, I feel like the way that, you know, when the streaming channels started popping up and people were just like, all right, we got to fill as much time as we can with everybody wants original, you know, premium, high quality TV shows, whatever.
Prestige.
That's what I'm looking for. I feel like there was a similar run in the 80s and 90s when the TV channel started to expand and like syndication started, where it's like, we need to put as much shit on TV as we can.
Yeah.
And so they just turned to these easily producible like talk shows. I guess the best analog would probably be reality TV.
Yeah.
Because I think they kind of occupy the same space, where it's like, it's a lot of the shows ended up being something that was a bit of a guilty pleasure, where you get to kind of peer into somebody else's weird life. So you can go like, well, at least I'm not like that. And it was always, you know, the different shows were always trying to one up each other with the sensationalism of it. Like, and they're always having neo-Nazis on and Satan worshipers and stuff.
And I think this movie does a great job of pulling all of those, like you were saying, all the different references in and all of these different types of TV shows that kind of don't exist anymore, where it's like, yeah, we're going to have this person on who thinks that they're channeling a demon through a little girl.
It's kind of surprising that this kind of thing has not made a comeback, because I feel like
Now people just have YouTube.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like in the internet age, it's never been easier to make a show like this that you could put on YouTube or something. Like all the late night shows now are kind of just the same thing.
They're all fairly identical to one another.
You know, I don't know if you've ever watched the Fox News late night show.
No.
Oh boy,
that sounds fairly cursed.
It is the most unfunny thing I think I've ever watched.
Great.
And the guy who's on it thinks he's hilarious, but even that show, it's the other side of the aisle, but it's still the same kind of shit.
Yeah.
You know, people doing impressions, people doing skits, and they're all mildly entertaining. There's nothing really that has any of the edge that it used to. Like, even Carson had a bit of an edge, but it was always the sub shows.
Yeah.
Like the Morton Downey Jr. or Phil Donahue or something like that. Yeah. Where he's, you know, I think Jerry Springer ruined it.
You pushed it too far.
And just turned it into just all trash all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like a lot of them used to be a mix, right? Like a little trash and then there's something genuinely entertaining. And then there's the guy with the animals who comes out.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think the climax to this movie, you know, we can argue about whether or not it sticks the landing, but I do think there are some really fun bits in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think the girl who plays Lily is fantastic.
She's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's really good.
Yeah. I don't know. I think just in general, the sort of vibes of this movie, the things that it's referencing and the fact that they did accomplish so much on such a low budget is just generally impressive.
Yeah.
I just find it a fun movie to watch.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things about it is the fact that since they're doing this pretty low budget, they can cast whoever they want.
Yeah.
And the only person in this who is, I mean, unless you're like have a working knowledge of all of the actors in like Australia, like the star, the only star, quote unquote, in this movie is David Dasmalchian. And I don't know if anybody in any other movie would call him the star of a movie.
Right. Was he ever a leading man?
This is his first leading role in a movie.
Yeah.
And I really like that they take a chance on someone like him because I think he's pretty good in this.
I think he fits the part really well where he's that, like, he's a good-looking guy, but he's not, like, a supermodel. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like he has that right level of, like, yeah, this is a guy who cleans up nice, but he still looks just like a guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like, you know... I don't know. I'm not coming up with it. It's not like trying to say, like, what if Matthew McConaughey was a late night host?
He looks believable as a late night talk show host.
Yeah. Where it's like he's a nice enough looking guy that you'd stare at him for 40 minutes at night, but he's not so good looking that he's like unrelatable in this kind of role or unbelievable in this kind of role.
Yeah.
I think he walks that edge between superficially charming and sympathetic, but also kind of just celebrity obsessed. Do you know what it, like, he's a complicated character.
Yeah.
And I think it can be tough at times to see, to be able to tell, like, what is his motivation and what does he believe in this moment? There are times during this movie where I think he's going through his own kind of journey of, like, does he believe what's happening in front of him? Does he think it's all staged? Is he sincere about his wanting to just show this as proof to the world that the supernatural exists? Or is it really purely selfish?
Yeah.
I think it's a mix of all of that. And I think he plays that really well, where he never slides into, like, scummy.
Right. He's right on the edge.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. My biggest question in this is, does he believe what's happening is real? But I also think that it doesn't, ultimately, maybe the point is that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because what he cares about is the ratings.
Yeah.
And are people watching this? And I mean, if he was at all concerned about the reality of the situation, he wouldn't convince Jane, or whatever her name is,
June,
and Lily to go out there and do their Dr. Wriggles, Mr. Wriggles thing.
Yeah. Dr. Wriggles. Yeah. You know, their Dr. Worm skit.
Yeah. It's like, it kind of reminded me of, maybe this is a little different because this person I think is probably objectively terrible, but anytime I hear a story about Vince McMahon talking an older wrestler into coming back for like one more match. Like, if you watch the Andre the Giant documentary, which is fantastic, there's a point where it's like, yeah, Andre couldn't really move and he was in pain all the time. And then, but Vince called him up and he was like, we need you, big man. We need you for one final match. You know, it'll be great. You'll go out. You'll be a legend, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, okay, I'll do it for you, boss. And like the Undertaker, the Undertaker is kind of like the ultimate one for me, because I feel like when you hear him talk about this, like you, it seems like he doesn't realize how much he's being used.
Yeah. Like he could have said no.
Yeah.
Like, he almost doesn't realize it was an option to him.
I think, well, with him, he's interesting because I think he wanted to have that last great match.
Yeah.
But it just kept not going that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he would get to the point where he's like, I can't do this anymore. And then Vince would be like, we need you for one more WrestleMania. It'll be great. You know, you'll go out, you'll be a champ, blah, 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 blah. And like, you know what? Okay, yeah. I'll do it for you. And it's like, Vince ain't doing this because he likes you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's, I mean, I'm sure he would obviously disagree with me there.
Yeah.
But like, he's doing it because it's going to make him money.
Right.
The Undertaker makes him money. Andre the Giant makes him money. That's why he's going to get them into the ring until they literally cannot walk anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of person who is focused on the spectacle and the ratings and the adulation.
Yeah.
That they're going to present what they want you to do as something that's like a great opportunity and as good for you as it is for me. But ultimately it's just so they can get what they want.
Right. And I think that's the interesting thing about the character of Jack in this movie, where I don't think he's saying, I want you to do this whether or not it harms this child. I don't think he's like, I don't fucking care if you harm this kid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem the type who's blatantly like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think he thinks he's doing it for everybody involved, right? Like, he thinks with Dr. June, he thinks this is going to be so great for her. Like, yeah, you'll go out and you'll show the world what you and Lily can do together, and you'll prove to everyone that this is real, and your book is going to sell like crazy. You're going to be asked to be on all these shows. You're going to have all of this popularity to spread your work more. Isn't that great? And then I'll get the ratings I need, and I'll beat Carson, and then I'll get my Emmy, and then I'll get what I want too. Isn't that great? Like, I think in his mind, that's what he's doing. It's like, no, this is going to be a win-win. Like, we're all going to come out of this having made history together.
Yeah. He's never presented as like the sort of baldly malicious,
right?
Scheming type.
I think he's just hit a level of like, he's obsessed and he's desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a little bit, you know, we can debate whether or not he knew he was sort of sacrificing his wife for fame, or if he knew that or not. But I think with him, there's definitely the sunk cost fallacy at work, where he feels like he's given everything. You know, he's given his whole life. He's given his wife's life to this. So he's got to get something out of it. It can't end in failure. And I think it just makes him a really fascinating character. Even the scenes where he's, you know, when they're off air and Gus tries to talk to him, and Gus says to him, I know you're not a bad man.
Right, right.
And I find that really telling, because at this point, you know, he and Gus have worked together for years and years. So if he were just a shithead, Gus seems like the type of guy who'd be like, yeah, I don't talk to him when the cameras are off. He's a shithead.
Yeah.
But instead, he's really convinced of Jack's goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me that, like, oh, yeah, Jack isn't just purely selfish and malicious.
Yeah.
But he has gone way off the rails.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking about, and I don't know if this is something that needs to be clarified, or if, because one of the things I do really like about this movie is how much stuff happens off screen.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on before this movie starts, as the movie's going on, you know, that whether it's Christu dying.
Yes.
Or even the Grove stuff, like the relationship he clearly has with June.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know exactly how how much they are intertwined with each other, right. But there's something there.
Right. There's clearly some sort of attraction at minimum, affair.
Yeah.
If not, then.
And the thing I don't know if it needs to be clarified or not is, what did Jack get in return for the death of his wife? If we're looking at this like linearly, it's like, okay, he's at the Grove. First of all, he's not getting invited to the Grove. Come on. It's like Ronald Reagan and ex-presidents and like the Saudi kings and shit are going there. I don't think the guy who's not beating Carson is going to the Grove. Anyway, so what we are told in this movie is that he was involved in some sort of, let's say, transaction with a demon.
Among the tall trees.
Among the tall trees. Similarly to in Rosemary's Baby, where they give up the husband gives up the baby in return for his success as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I couldn't figure out is, when we start the movie, when we come into this actual episode,
yeah,
he's still not on top.
Right.
So is the idea that this episode is the monkey's paw version of him getting what he wants, but the cost was the life of his wife, which happened beforehand?
So after watching this movie...
You wrote the movie, you should know.
After watching this movie a couple times, my theory is, and my theory does not have to be anybody else's theory.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things I like about this movie, is they do just kind of throw a lot out at you.
Yeah.
And you could feasibly put these puzzle pieces together in a couple different ways, right, and come out with a couple different answers. Mine is, the only reason he was invited to the Grove is that he's the patsy.
Okay. Yep. That's possible. Yep.
And they are using him... All of this on both sides, what happened to Lily and what happened to Jack, has been coordinated to get them into the same room.
Sure.
So that what happens, happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory, is that he thought he was making a deal to become the most successful late night host ever, or whatever his dream actually was. He thought he was making that deal. And in reality, they were setting him up to kind of do the bidding of the demon and take the fall.
Sure.
you seem highly unconvinced.
No, I'm that's definitely
something.
You can
tell me I'm full of shit.
No, I don't think that at all. It's just I'm doing the story math in my head, and I'm like, well, so by that logic, then what do the people who set him up get out of it? And I think that's
the rich and powerful. They're staying rich and powerful.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's another good example of my narrative cone of vision thing, where it's like they kind of basically the perimeter of your story is the studio.
Yeah.
And anything that happens outside that studio is up for debate.
Yep.
But like, they're all questions that have a million answers that you're not going to learn, because it's not important to the story that you're watching.
It's, sure.
It's a story about Jack and his aspirations, ambition, and vanity getting in the way of the relationship he has with his wife.
Yep.
And having to pay a price for it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think the way that they kind of, and maybe that's the thing that bugs me a little bit about how it ends, how it plays out at the end, is because they keep things so nicely contained for most of the movie. And then it's like, okay, we're going to go completely off the rails here in a different kind of stylistic way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You know, I still really enjoy it. I think it's a very rewatchable movie.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of details I noticed going through it this time that I had not caught the first time I watched it.
Did you see the ghost hand on his shoulder?
Yes.
I never noticed that before.
I really like that, where you see her caught on film, and then when it cuts to him and he says her name, there's a hand on his shoulder.
I don't like the way, when they show that ghost,
yeah,
I thought it was an alien. It looked like Mr. Burns when they think he's an alien on The Simpsons, but he's just
it kind of did.
Gacked out on eye drops or something.
Yeah. Gacked out on eye drops. But I agree. It doesn't look great in that shot. That I think is some of the bad CGI we talked about earlier, because it kind of has her face do that like stretched mouth and, thing. And it's just sort of not necessary. Like, you could have just shown her looking very ill and skeletal and standing behind him, and that would have been enough.
Yeah. The other thing, though, is like, what I think the most, the special effect that has scared me the most and made the biggest impact on me as a child, and even now I think it's, I prefer it, is the old, very simple optical ghost, which is essentially just like, you photograph someone, you drop the opacity a bit, you put a little bit of special effects on there, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Anytime they do CGI ghosts.
Yeah, they look like force ghosts.
Yeah.
It
all looks
movies.
Video gamey. Yeah, yeah, and I think it's, they're getting closer, kind of, but I just don't find CGI scary.
Yeah.
Because there's, you, 9 times out of 10, you know that this is just computer.
Yep.
And it's all computer, as a great man would say.
Yes.
And it just doesn't have, that's why, like, when you see a movie like this, right? The CGI ghost has no juice to it.
Right.
But when Gus rips his own stomach open,
yes,
even though you can tell he's wearing a piece or whatever.
Sure.
The fact that he's actually doing it.
And he's sitting there screaming about it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's great.
It's always going to be better. Even if it's not the most convincing practical effect.
Yeah.
The fact that it's real and tactical is, it's always going to be better.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
But I do love that there's a lot of little kind of comments and asides in this movie that reward your attention. Even things that feel like they're sort of window dressing or throwaway lines end up, I think, having a little more of an import at times than you would initially think. Like, I think Carmichael is a really interesting character, because he's there to be the skeptic and the naysayer, but also a bunch of the stuff that he says ends up being really important to what's happening, where when they start talking about Abraxas, he says, well, Abraxas is
the
Santana
album.
Yeah.
Nice.
Abraxas is a consummate showman. He craves an audience, and it explains so much about Lily.
Yeah.
Like how fucking excited she seems to be on TV, and how she can't stop staring at the cameras.
Yeah.
And how she's really eager to do her little Mr. Wriggles display in a way that you would think a kid who's been through what she's been through would not be.
Yeah.
And I find that really interesting. And then I find when they do the little intro video about Lily's background, there's a comment that says anyone who sees one of these sacrifices, like, it spreads the madness.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah. There's, I forget exactly how it's phrased, but it's pretty much like witnesses to these rituals go insane.
Yeah.
And then,
cause that's the setup, right? It's like the video, the package they show about her.
Yes.
Is the same thing that happens this night is what happened to, Xandor Diabo.
Yeah. Yes.
And his buddies there.
Yeah, and they say, you know, when Diabo sets the house on fire, Lily's the only survivor, and there's a question about whether or not that was an accident or if that was the plan all along.
Right, yeah.
And it seems like, yeah, it was the plan all along, is to put the demon in this little girl and then let her out into the world. And then by the end of this movie, Jack has stabbed her with a sacrificial dagger on live TV.
Yeah.
Beaming into a bunch of households this ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore spreading the madness. Which I think it works. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I really like that backstory that they give her. Because again, it's another thing where it's like they give you just enough.
Yeah. just enough satanic panic Waco.
Yes. Yeah. And I really like the footage they show of Xandor and his buddies. Because there's
Xandor.
he's modeled after, clearly after Anton LaVey.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley.
Aleister Crowley, yeah. And there's a certain, you can find footage that looks just like that from like the late 60s and the 70s.
Yes.
Where it's these, Anton LaVey is, I don't know much about him, but he seems, I feel like I know him. Because he very much seems like the type where it's like, he's just trying to freak out the squares.
Oh, yeah.
He takes himself very seriously.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he's just trying to freak out the squares.
Yes.
There's nothing more powerful than wanting to freak out the squares because they always fall for it.
Gotta love it.
I was, you know, my friend Dan and I talk about this every now and then. Isn't it kind of strange that there's like nobody in music anymore who's dangerous, quote unquote? Like, remember Marilyn Manson in the 90s? They blamed him for fucking Columbine.
Like,
that was like one of the things. It's like, it's trench coats, but mostly Marilyn Manson is, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. Like, it's not like,
I think it happens in a more niche way that we maybe hear less about because of our media ecosystems being so siloed.
Yeah.
Like, when Lil Nas X came out with a music video where he did a lap dance for Satan in hell.
That was great. Everybody, that's what I'm talking about.
But everybody on the right who, you know, they lost their minds.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people on that side of politics who freaked the fuck out about this black man who's gay, and now they're like, now he loves Satan.
Yeah.
And they could not handle it, and the rhetoric around it was intense and extreme, but it fades so quickly now. Like, our media cycles are just so fast.
Yeah. That, like, if Lil Nas X had managed to keep up that,
His next, I'm sure his next album, there'll be, he'll step it up somehow and freak everybody out again.
It's like everything else. It's like, you get this. I think you probably get the same amount of freak out, but it happens all at once now.
Yeah. Everything's like extinction burst.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of 10 years later, someone looking back and writing a book about Satanic Panic. It's like, I don't even remember when that happened.
Yeah.
That was like a weekend, I think, where people were.
Right.
You know, freaked out about something. I don't know.
And then something else happened, and then wet-ass flooded.
Pussy came out. And
yeah. Everybody lost their minds over that, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There is a Kidz Bop version of...
Is there really?
But it's called Wings and Pizza.
My favorite thing...
Sorry, that's such a digression, but I just hadn't thought about it for a long time, and it is... it's quite a choice.
Well, I remember when that song came out... They put out a radio-friendly version where they cleaned it up, quote-unquote.
Uh-huh.
And I, much like they do in any time you have to do this in a movie or whatever, it makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah.
I thought the alternate line was so much worse because instead of the chorus being wet-ass pussy, it was wet and gushy.
Oh, right.
And I was like, that's so much worse.
Yeah, that's not better.
No.
It's definitely not better.
Nope. We're covering a lot of stuff in this episode.
Oh, yeah. This is a wide-ranging one.
But, yeah, I really like that stuff. I really like that it gives you just enough for you to kind of fill in the gaps yourself.
Yeah.
I think maybe... Well, I was going to say maybe they explain it a bit too much towards the end, but I think I like it. I think it's good. How do you feel? Do you like the guests on the show? You've got your Carmichael.
I do.
Your
Christu.
Christu.
Yeah. Christu is such a type.
Yes.
Do you know, like he's both like that type still exists, especially I think on like TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also very much of an era. Like he's a person of color, but he's doing an accent that's not
that's
his
my favorite
accent.
Part, is that when shit starts to get really dropped the accent? Yeah.
Yeah, and he clearly is doing the cold calling thing where they've prepped with some people in the audience, and he's doing the kind of fishing around to get a response.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end, he has a legitimate psychic experience.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't seem totally shocked by that either.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's interesting because he's like half phony, half genuine.
He kind of reminds me of Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost. which okay. is kind of the same character because yeah, she's yeah. the fortune teller,
mm-hmm.
who I think she also does a fake accent.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Patrick Swayze shows up,
yeah.
she's not surprised by it. She's
right.
like, she's dealt with this before.
Yes, yes. It's like I exaggerate sometimes because sometimes the juice just isn't flowing, but also this really happens to me.
Yeah.
And I like Christu seems like he might be a character like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. They don't really go into poor Christu's inner life before he spouts and then dies.
Yeah, Christu's the kind of character where if he was around longer, it would be like he would have that monologue about his grandmother yes. being a Santeria yes. priestess.
And he would
some
explain
shit.
To everybody exactly what was going on before yes. he got killed by the demon.
Yeah, even though he's just a charlatan.
Right.
Except
right.
he's not.
Well, and it's interesting because I feel like those characters were prevalent on this type of television and even like daytime talk shows in mm-hmm. the 90s in a way that we don't really see them anymore.
Yeah.
There's kind of
yeah.
like the Long Island medium.
Yeah, they all get their own shows now.
Yeah, but
it's not as fun.
Right, and not as wide of an audience is being exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you might have watched, you know, Ricky Lake's show.
Oh, I did.
Because you wanted to see a segment about
boobs.
Sure.
I don't even remember what she had on that show. That was
well,
not
you know,
the, show
the new
that.
The new diet fad. Is it real? Is it fake?
Oh,
it,
sure,
will,
yeah.
will it help you or whatever? And then also there happened to be a segment with a medium.
Yeah.
And you weren't there for the medium, but you'd end up watching the medium because you were waiting to watch this other segment about liposuction
mm-hmm.
or whatever bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And now, again, everything is sort of in a bucket. Like, you'd have to go watch the Long Island medium show on
yeah.
whatever, you know, TLC or
Oxygen.
Whatever it's on. Yeah. Mm. And then having him and Carmichael on is also really fun because there was, I don't know, obviously, I wasn't around in the 70s, so I don't know if this was happening in the 70s, but I do remember in the 90s when there would be televised magic shows.
Oh, I love those.
I fucking...
Magician Secrets Revealed, love that
I
show.
I loved those. I loved those so much. And mm-hmm. I remember watching televised magic shows and being nervous that the hypnotist thing was going to work on me.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it never did.
Yeah.
But as a kid, you're like, but what if it does this time? And then the ones where it would be the secrets revealed and mm-hmm. they would show you how it was done. There's sort of a long lineage of this kind of thing on TV. And I think it was really fun to include all of that along mm-hmm. with this. I think the Carmichael character, especially, again, he serves an important purpose both as the skeptic and as somebody who's dropping some knowledge.
Yeah.
Throughout. And then I love how his character ends.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I love that he's the skeptic. And then when Lily's head splits open and starts spewing electricity and light,
mm-hmm.
He immediately drops to his knees and is like, I will worship you, yeah. Lord of the Flies. And then when that doesn't work, he tries to give her the check.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, the check is a fun detail.
Oh,
there was I'm
so
sure
funny.
This is not the only time that this has been done, but there was a group in the early 1900s called the the Science Society of something. Anyway, it was a group of skeptics
mm-hmm.
who were interested in the supernatural
mm-hmm.
and they put up like a $500,000 or something for
yeah.
anyone who could prove that they were doing that the stuff they were doing was real.
Yeah, yeah.
Two of the main members of this group, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and mm-hmm. Harry Houdini,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of my favorite relationships because Conan Doyle wanted to give that check to literally everybody.
Oh, yeah. He was a true believer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Houdini wanted to give it to literally no one
right.
because he knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And so I assume that's probably what they're referencing. I'm sure it's that kind of thing happens all
yeah.
the time where it's like, you know, bend these spoons and I'll give you a bunch of money or
yes.
something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And Carmichael's kind of based on this guy named the Amazing Randy, who was a magician who then turned into a debunker.
Mm.
He had a really great documentary on Netflix, like back in the early days of Netflix.
Oh, cool.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere still, but it's worth a watch. He's a pretty interesting guy. He passed away relatively recently, I think. How do you feel about cold reading? Because if I'm cracking into a book, I prefer a blanket.
Well, I am the one who insisted on continuing to wear her winter hat inside your house while we...
You're right to do it. My house gets cold.
Record, so you know I don't like cold.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I don't disparage people who are into it or like it, whether it's for entertainment purposes. But I do think it's, you know... I think it always lends itself more towards predatory than helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because people will probably give me shit for this because they know that I like tarot cards, which we chatted about a little bit with your friend Travis the other mm-hmm. night. We watched the movie. Mm-hmm. I like tarot cards, though, as almost like a meditation exercise or a thought exercise. Mm-hmm. Where you sit...
As in, like, I thought my future was going to be more exciting.
Well, like, you think of a problem you're having, an issue you're having, something that's stressing you out, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you pull a couple cards and you sit and you think about it.
Sure.
You know, and it maybe gives you some symbolism, something that helps you think about it in a different way, or gives you a jumping off point to sit down and start journaling about it, or whatever you need to do to process your thoughts and feelings about whatever you're stressed about, whatever thing has been bothering you from your past, whatever thing you're worried about in the future. And it's, to me, it's really more about working through your own feelings. Mm-hmm. I think tarot can be helpful in that way mm-hmm. for people who like it. I don't think cold reading does that mm-hmm. for anybody. I think it's, you know... Somebody comes in and they say, yes, I'm getting a message from your dead grandmother. And she wants you to know that you look really nice in that sweatshirt. Hmm. And she loves you.
Thanks, Nana.
Right. Like, that's a nice thing to say, but it's also very much a lie.
Sure.
Like, your Nana's not talking to me. I'm sorry. And so it just feels like...
She likes meeting new people. She might be.
Maybe she would, but she's not right now.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? I don't see how there's a redeeming... part of it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to do a comic book that dealt with that stuff for a long time. I got really into the story of Houdini, especially that part of his history where he kind of, the last act of his life was basically about him going around debunking all of these spiritualists, because after the death of his mother, he was so offended that people would come up to him and say, I've talked to your mother.
Yeah.
That he basically turned his entire arsenal on these people and you know, ran them out of town. And it got me thinking about it a lot because I think there was an aspect of it where I think the cold reading thing, that's just so much of a sideshow attraction.
Mm-hmm.
That it's tough to find something redeemable about it other than it just being kind of fun.
Yeah.
But like when I think about the rise of spiritualism in the late 1800s and again in basically every time there was a major war and everybody couldn't
everybody had a lot of dead loved ones that they really missed and they couldn't cope with their grief because we don't live in a society that's good at that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, it didn't bother the English. The English just didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It never happened. they just shove it way down and then they die at 40. But like, and so there was a part of me that's thinking like, well, if a person is coming to you who is looking for closure and you can give that to them, there's a part of me that thinks, okay, are you really hurting anybody by doing that?
Mm.
But at the same time, if you are exploiting that and specifically doing it for like monetary gain,
which they always are.
Like there were very few of them that were just doing it out of the goodness.
That's kind of my thing is I'm more okay with it actually if you're just paying for it for entertainment.
Sure.
If you're going and you're going to treat this like going to fucking Cirque du Soleil or something, great, have fun. Like I would probably do that. Mm-hmm. I would probably go to a séance at a spooky location.
I really want
for something.
I am dying to go to a classic, like
table tipping
seance.
Yeah,
I can't find. The only place I've found that I think does it is at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado.
I will go to the Stanley Hotel with you.
So, I'm going to Denver. Next year for a comic convention.
Ooh.
And then I'm going to try to convince Caitlin maybe we should swing by the Stanley Hotel for a couple nights or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if we can
yeah.
get our schedules to work,
yeah.
you guys should come.
Fuck
and we
yes.
should do, and Greg and Caitlin can go
yeah,
do something they want to do.
Drink at the bar.
Yeah.
You and I can go to the seance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, so we'll have to work that out. But,
all right, cool.
But like I'm dying because like, there's no pictures of that stuff. It's a couple, but it's like I've never yeah. totally been able to wrap my mind around exactly what happens at one of these
yeah.
things, and I really want to know.
Yeah, and I again, as something where it's like it's intellectual curiosity or it's entertainment, or, you know, things like that. We're all adults. You can spend your money how you want,
mm-hmm.
but where it gets me, where I start to get skeptical of it, are the people who are emotionally devastated by a loss.
Yeah.
And they are just going to keep throwing their money at someone or multiple someones to say, but I need to talk to my dead loved one again.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there are people who are like that.
That's what Arthur Conan Doyle did. He had a son who died, I think, in World War I. I could be wrong, but he had a son who died. And he basically kept this one spiritualist on retainer.
Yeah.
Because she was... he believed that she could talk to his dead son.
Yeah.
And it's like, at that point, it's like, yeah, that's when it gets kind of dicey.
Yeah.
He believed in this person so much that he had Houdini and his wife came over for dinner because he wanted to be like, she's the real deal. I got to show you this.
Oh,
and
no.
Houdini basically
Yeesh.
Debunked her in front of Doyle.
Yeah.
And instead of understanding what was going on, he just got really mad and they kind of stopped being friends.
Yeah, of course. Like, but yeah. obviously, of course, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, especially yeah. back then when it was turning into this religion.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
It's like you're showing up and you're saying, like, none of the stuff in that yeah. book is true.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus, it didn't do X, Y, you know?
Yeah, Muhammad, yeah, yeah.
Whatever. And people are going to get mad when you're doing that.
Yeah.
But that's when it gets... So I may have told this story before, but as I was... into this stuff and thinking about it a lot. My grandmother, my aunt had a psychic come to my grandmother's house.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of to talk, you know, just kind of to do with it. And I remember my grandmother talking about it and she's like, yeah, yeah, it was fun. I got to talk to Hank, her husband who had been dead. And he's like, he's doing well. And for some reason, I got really mad.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think she thought that much about it
because yeah,
I think she
yeah.
realized it was bullshit or whatever.
But she was just sort of like, eh, okay.
Yeah. And it was like the fact that she was like, yeah, I got to talk to Hank. It was really nice. I'm like, okay, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Because now I feel like a loved one is being taken advantage
right,
of.
Right,
you know?
Right. Like someone has come into your family and is taking advantage of your grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a good feeling. And someone, you know, some stranger presuming that they would know what your grandfather was like and,
right.
and
yeah.
you know, would potentially lie to your grandmother about this. That, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is strange though. Cause like if the person you're talking to, if you are a medium or whatever, can come away from that interaction feeling better and more relieved about the grief that they're dealing with.
Yeah. And you also haven't like put them into debt.
Yeah. As long as it's not like, yeah, Hank says hi. And he yeah, also says,
that'll be $15,000, please.
He also said to tell me where the money is or whatever.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
it's like, that's when it gets really creepy. Yeah. But if, you know, the same... I apologize to anyone if this makes you mad, but the same way you would find that relief, say at a church,
sure,
you know, through prayer or something, mm-hmm. like if that brings you the relief that you're looking for,
yeah,
where is the line,
yeah,
that makes it totally bad?
Right, right. I do think it's a complicated issue. Like,
yeah.
I myself am not a fan of it as a blanket rule.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I do. I do think that the opportunities for abuse
yeah.
and taking advantage of people are very wide within it. But also, yeah, I can't just say flat out, no, it's always bad.
Yeah.
It's always bad and no one should ever do it. No, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's still, I do still find it kind of impressive. It's very fun.
Well, that's the thing. If you go into it and you think of it more as like a magic trick.
Yeah.
The way, you know, Carmichael in the movie does all these little sleight of hand bits at the beginning. Just sort of make the audience, ooh, ah. And then he mm-hmm. does his little hypnosis thing. And then he explains how he did it.
Yeah.
If you think of it more like that, then I don't see anything wrong with it. It's when people are willing to put, you know, to damage their real lives, their material lives in favor of this, mm-hmm. you know, to put themselves into debt or damage their relationship with living family and friends in order to continue to do this as though it is almost like an addiction.
Yeah.
Then it becomes predatory, and then I think it's bad.
When you direct someone to find the thing they're looking for in a location that they will not find it, and even go so far as to the fact that pointing them towards something that doesn't actually exist, like, say, the basement of an Alamo.
What's happening right now?
Even Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
No.
What the hell is wrong with you?
A lot. I think I'm going to get fired, you guys. I think this is my last episode. Anyway, how do you feel about Dr. June?
There's no basement in the Alamo.
I would like to talk about Dr. June.
Dr. June, she's fine.
Is she?
I don't know. I don't know anything anymore.
Did I just accidentally end the episode?
Yeah, I just... You know, you think you know someone and just...
Well, your nana is telling me that I don't have to watch
My
Pee-wee's
nana's
Big
telling
Adventure.
Me that I need to find new friends.
It's probably true.
Dr. June is... Yeah, I think she... Well, what do you think of her? Because I don't think that she really comes across as someone with any ulterior motives or anything. Do you?
That it's really interesting you should say that, because I think she's in her own way just as complicated as Jack.
Okay.
Because she is writing a book and appearing on talk shows with
That's
a
true.
Child.
Yep.
She is promoting her work
mm-hmm.
via Lily, an extraordinarily traumatized kid.
Right.
Who actually is possessed by a demon in the end. But putting that aside, she is sort of an analog to Lawrence Pazder, who was the psychiatrist who worked with Michelle of Michelle Remembers,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where they go from...
Spoiler alert, she didn't remember shit.
She thought she did. But what should be a very professional doctor-patient relationship...
Yeah.
Clearly the boundaries have very much blurred in the way she talks about Lily. She's like, I'm her guardian now. We're family. And it's like, no. These things should not be all happening. Like, you should not be her guardian or her quote unquote family and also be her doctor and also be her what? Talent agent who's like taking her on tour?
Yeah. So, at the same time, though, she doesn't come off like Dr. Loomis in the Rob Zombie Halloween, where he's like written the book about Michael Myers and clearly like he's going and doing these talks
right
for the point of selling books, like she never comes off like she's there trying to hawk her book,
but she is, right? Like that's why she's there. She wants to prove that her field is legitimate.
Right.
It's not so much about her specifically in her book. It's about her whole field. You can like sense it in the defensiveness she gets when Jack introduced her and he says, "Well, you call yourself a parapsychologist or something like that." Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Well, I call myself that because that's what I am."
Yeah. I very briefly looked into trying to get a degree in parapsychology.
I think you did once.
Because I figured there was probably some website
mm-hmm.
that I, you know, pay like $100 and they would give me a certificate. I figured it was the easiest PhD I could get.
Oh, no.
It's not as easy as I thought. You'd be surprised how few places will offer a degree in parapsychology.
I bet I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Stanford does, apparently.
Oh, apparently. But do you know what I mean? I think in her way, she is like Jack, mm-hmm. where he doesn't think what he's doing is entirely selfish.
Yeah.
He thinks he's going to be successful and he's going to spread that success to these other people. And I think she feels the same way. I think she mm-hmm. thinks what she's doing is not entirely selfish, but she is, she does have a chip on her shoulder and she does have an ulterior motive of, I want to legitimize my field and right. I want to prove to the world that the things Lily is saying and doing are real and that my, all my years of study and all my work is valid. And so it's not this like protective altruistic thing that she kind of tries to present it as. Yeah. And
because if she was doing it, if she was trying to protect Lily,
yeah, she wouldn't take her on TV. Done
that. Well, yeah. She might take her on TV, but she would not have done that demonstration.
Yeah.
You know, like, and
I don't
the
think
way,
she even would have taken her on TV.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But the way Jack pitches it to her mm-hmm. is like, don't you want people to yes. know that this is real?
Yes. His, when he talks to June in all of the off air segments where they kind of have their little tete-a-tetes, he's always saying to her, you've done all the work. You've worked so hard. This is your time. This mm-hmm. is your chance. And she kind of acts annoyed with him and like pissed off with him. But it does work. It does get her to go along with it.
Yeah.
So I think she is a more complicated character than it might seem on the surface, where it's like, well, she's really protective of Lily. And like, she seems to be trying to do the right thing. And it's like, well, yeah. She is, but she's also, obviously the temptation is there and she's giving into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. how do you feel about the way everything wraps up, where it goes into, at a certain point, all the ectoplasmic shit hits the proverbial fan.
Yes.
And, Lily's head splits open.
That is my favorite scene in the movie, is when she kind of becomes the conduit
mm-hmm.
and then her head splits open and she like systematically kills like four yeah. people in a row.
I've seen this three times now
uh-huh.
and every time I expect them to come back mm-hmm. and everybody's alive
mm-hmm.
like, because it feels very much like a, oh yeah, you kill everybody and then like the, I feel like they kind of set it up with the worm thing.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, this is all just a,
yep. a hallucination. A hypnotic suggestion
yeah.
thing.
And that's why I always love it when they do come back and he yeah. has just killed Lily.
Yeah.
They like zoom out
and everyone's
dead.
Yeah. I think the stuff between that scene and the very end, it's a little iffy, right? Mm-hmm. Like it sort of walks him through this like nightmare vision of his TV show. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's supposed to be more representative of what's going on inside of Jack's head rather than what's actually going on physically around him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I do think it works in the end though.
Yeah.
Like I think this movie ends itself as well as it possibly could have.
That's the thing, is like, as much as it,
because what else are you going to have happen? Yeah. Like, turns out she's not the devil. Like, that yeah. would suck to have it actually have just been all hypnotic suggestion and then everybody laughs at him and goes home. Like, that's not an ending.
Yeah, and you've got so much stuff that they have laid out that you have to pay mm-hmm. off some of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad it doesn't go for the, well, they somehow manage to exorcise the demon and then
sure,
she's
yeah.
fine and everybody lives on. Like, I think that would have been way too trite of yeah. an ending.
Yeah, I think it just, I wonder if there's a way they could have done what they did still within the parameters of the gimmick of the show. Mm. But again, like, who cares, I guess?
Yeah, sort of.
You know,
like,
you're making a movie. Like, it's not,
if this movie does at times choose style over
yeah,
logic,
like,
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
They have their stylistic conceit,
mm-hmm.
but they are not so. So something like the WNUF thing,
mm-hmm.
part of what they're doing, that they're, part of the success of it is that they are actively trying to be as realistic as possible.
Sure.
Whereas this, that's you know, that's from the beginning, that's not what they're doing.
Right,
you know?
Right. Like, this isn't trying to do the movie equivalent of War of the Worlds. You know,
right.
It's not trying to. I never feel at any point is this movie trying to actually convince the audience that this is real tape of a real 1977 mm-hmm. late night talk show.
Right, yeah.
I never get that feeling.
And I don't know if that's a plus or a minus for me.
Sure.
Because I love that stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I remember, you're probably too young for this, but were you aware at all of the Blair Witch stuff when Blair,
oh, yeah.
You were, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember before that movie came out,
mm-hmm.
the Sci-Fi Channel mm-hmm. did a show that was basically a kayfabe show about the cans of film that they found.
Oh, wow.
And I was riveted.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. Because the basic conceit of the Blair Witch Project is not insane.
I love that movie.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting when we eventually get to that, because mm-hmm. I think I've seen it once.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it until well after the whole everything about, so I knew everything about it. And,
okay.
And so when I finally saw it, I was like,
Yeah.
And I watched it at home. And,
yeah.
So I'm interested to go back and watch it again, especially.
Yeah. I love that movie more for what it represents and less for the movie that it actually is.
But, but that's an instance in where, like, I was locked in on
well,
that.
There were, like, people genuinely believed that the actors in it were dead.
Yeah.
It was real for a lot of people.
That happened in Cannibal Holocaust as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People thought everything in it was 100% real.
The director actually got taken to court because they thought he actually killed people. And so the actors had to show up and
hello.
Be like, hello, I'm not dead.
Hello, here I am.
But when the movie first came out, he did not allow them to come to the premiere because he wanted the illusion that they were all dead. Anyway. But like, I love that stuff. Like, Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
A lot of people poo-poo that, works on me. 100%.
I fall asleep during that movie.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Everybody just looks so, like, comfy in their beds before shit goes wrong. So I'm just like,
It's easy to fall asleep.
I could go to sleep, too.
And so, like, there's a part of me that wants this to be more faithful to that sort of, like Ghost Watch.
Mm.
Ghost Watch is entirely fictitious,
but
they play it completely straight.
Yeah.
Down to the fact that the people who are hosting the show were like actual BBC people.
Mm.
And so people were not happy.
Yeah.
Because even though at the beginning they say this is fake.
Right.
You turn that show on 5 minutes late.
And you think. But I totally see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I don't. When I watch this movie, from the very beginning of it, it doesn't actually give me that vibe.
Right, yeah.
I know it's kind of saying it's that style of movie. Like, in the initial voiceover, it's like telling you that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
But the minute you see it, it's very obviously not.
Yeah, I think there's I think the characters are... this may sound weird, but the characters stay in character too much for it to ever feel real. Like, if this was an actual recording of something that was actually happening, I don't think Carmichael is going to be as big and over the top and verbose as he is. I think there's going to be a lot more.
At least some of them would have had their stage persona and then their off stage persona.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot more. No one's really sure what's going on here. You know, like a lot more reticence when it comes to what's going on with the girl stuff.
Yeah.
So it's clear, like, it's not meant to be.
Right.
You know.
Sticking directly to this little subgenre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it. I think it's a good movie. Do you have anything else you want to touch on before we go?
I just want to say it's kind of funny that we ended up doing this one after we covered the remake of Suspiria on our Patreon, because this takes place in the same year.
That's true.
So we're just doing 1977 corner over here.
That's true.
Which was a very tumultuous time in the world.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. The 70s were wild. Basically the whole world went crazy in 1968, and then it lasted for like 10 years.
I think we're back in one of those cycles.
Yeah, me too.
Skimming my notes. Yeah, no, I think that's I think that's pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
I forgot to mention my favorite character in the movie is the skeleton guy.
Yes, I do love that.
Really like that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I think he's very effective because the fact that he's completely non-responsive,
yes,
immediately gives you like a little bit of a,
yeah, like what's up? What's up with that? Here, yeah. And they never really he pops up in several shots, but they never draw direct attention to him.
Yeah,
you know, Gus is never like, hey, what about you? Where are you in town from? Like, you know, nobody ever tries to sort of draw him in. He's mm-hmm. just sort of sitting in the audience, and whenever it cuts to the audience, it's just he's very noticeable.
Yeah. I was expecting more from him, but I am not upset that you don't get more from him.
Yeah.
I think he works as just sort of like an omen.
The specter of death.
Yes.
Yeah. I also like that there's a visual symmetry between the skeleton costume guy and Minnie.
Yes.
I really like that it's like she kind of looks like that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that works well.
Yeah, me too.
I also like the jump scare when Lily is tied to the chair and June has slapped her, and then mm-hmm. June is kind of like leaning forward to apologize. And when she jerks her head,
oh, she's a monster face.
Yeah, you get like a quick glimpse of like she's even more of a monster face with like teeth.
Yeah.
I like that. I thought that one. Yeah, I think that one was done pretty well.
I think one of the things they do very well is they play the supernatural stuff pretty subtle's not really the right word because it's not really the subtlest movie, but I think the one place where it might lose people is the sequence with the worms. Because
sure.
that's the first time where they basically like they're still doing the gimmick, but
yeah.
this is not the gimmick. Like, right, like you
right.
are, and even
you're
the way
you're supposed to have been hypnotized.
Yeah,
you know,
the way
you
that
have
they explain
to
it,
sort of
yeah, yeah,
buy into the idea that this is possible.
Yeah, but some of a lot of the other stuff when they are still trying to play in the quote unquote real world.
Yeah,
I do think it's very very cool the way they hint at some of the stuff and whatnot.
Yeah, I think it's a fun movie.
Yeah. This was, as I mentioned before, recently on our list. It is no longer on the list. Would you put it on the list?
It's a tough question. I mean, here are my reasons for saying yes. Mm-hmm. My reasons, if I were to say yes, my reasons would be partially...
This is exactly how you responded when your husband asked you to marry him too, right?
Yeah.
Here's all the pros and cons.
Right, yeah. And I said them out loud to his face
yes.
while he was down on one knee in front mm-hmm. of me. I really like this movie and I think it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
B, I do think it's unique. I know it's kind of doing stuff that other movies have done, but I think the style in which it did mm-hmm. it is unique. And then C, when you mentioned at the top of this episode, the scores sound really high.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if that weighs in on what ends up on this list at all, then
97 Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's kinda hard to argue against that.
Yeah.
But also on the other hand, I do feel like it was one of those movies that made a lot of sense that it appeared on the list when it did, when it was new and people were excited about it. And it makes a lot of sense to me that as years pass and other new and exciting horror movies come out, this mm-hmm. one might drop off.
Yes, which seems to be what has happened.
Are we going to dive into...
Yeah, so first up, to tell you guys what we're going to do for the rest of the year, we have two more episodes mm-hmm. before the end of the year. And so we are going to not make the same mistake we did three years ago with Nosferatu and completely mm-hmm. blow right past the centennial.
Yep.
So next up, we're going to do number 93 on our list, which is the 1925 version of Phantom of the Opera.
I hope you're doing your vocal warm-ups now.
It's a silent movie.
You're not going to sing the score over it?
No, I'm just going to go and make that face. And then, much to my chagrin, the episode following that will be the the main feed coinciding wrap up of our Patreon coverage of remakes and reboots
mm-hmm.
because we are doing on Patreon patreon.com/PenskeyFile we are doing the first remake of Black Christmas,
mm-hmm.
known as Black Xmas. And on our main feed for our final episode
can't
of the year,
say Black Christmas anymore.
We're saying Black Christmas again. We're saying
bringing
it, again.
It back.
Yeah, we're gonna for the last episode of the main feed. We're gonna be doing the second remake of Black Christmas, which I'm gonna go into it as objectively as I can, but yeah. I'm not super looking forward to it. So
you will have to, and I plan on doing this too. We should probably both hold our annual rewatch of the original Black Christmas until
yes.
after we have watched these.
Agree.
So as not to poison yeah. the well more than it already has yeah. been.
Part of me, I can't decide if I want you to really like the new Black Christmas or also really dislike the Black Christmas, because I feel
we'll
like it's going to be interesting to hear either way.
I mean, I've never had a problem disagreeing with you, Clay, so.
Yeah, well, that's true. Especially when it comes to how much you get paid. so, yes, so that's what we're doing. So now a quick update, as quick as I can, on our list
as
where.
As he reads through 200 movie titles.
200 movie titles. Yes, basically everything on our list has moved. The things I can tell you is. The movies that were removed previously are almost all back on the list. I think every single one of them, the last time that I went through
mm-hmm.
and checked on the movies that had been removed, those ones are now all back on the list.
Just to fuck with us.
Yes. And on the flip side of that, every single movie that was added the last time now gone. So previously added to the list was What We Do in the Shadows, Diabolique, Talk to Me, Prey, Megan, Godzilla, Pearl, X, The Amusement Park, Barbarian, Werewolf by Night, Upgrade, The Blackening, Grindhouse, Saint Maud, Annihilation, Fear Street 1-3, Santa Sangre, Gremlins, The Black Phone, Kronos, Freaky, Evil Dead Rise, Scream 5 and 6, Fresh, Saw X, Predator, Warm Bodies, Split, Smile, Werewolves Within, Bubba Hotep, Overlord, Little Monsters, and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. All gone.
Jeez.
Every single one that was added previously is now gone. The biggest jump.
Yes.
I have to say this is the biggest jump is, where are you, you son of a bitch? So the movie Host, which was the, pandemic.
That one.
Zoom movie.
Yes.
Big fan.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that movie quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was on the list previously at number 34, which is a generous rating, I would say.
Sure,
for that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it was removed.
Okay.
It is now back on the list.
Uh-huh.
At number 7.
What?
Yeah. So that's...
That is not the direction I thought this jump was going to go in.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to... I thought when you started saying... I thought you were going to be like 79.
Nope.
I was like, yeah, sure, fine.
Nope.
Number 7. Wow.
But yeah, we have a bunch of movies that were removed. As I said, I think all of them are back on. Wes Craven's New Nightmares back on. House of the Devil. Halloween 2018. Candyman. You're Next. Deep Red. Sisters. The Platform. Scream 2. Creature from the Black Lagoon. All of these movies had been removed and now they are back on. A couple other big jumps. We've
wow.
got... Invisible Man 2020 dropped 35 places from number 30 to 65. The Invitation has jumped up from 138 to number 91.
Hmm.
28 Days Later has fallen from 72 to 121. Mandy has jumped up from 122 to number 78.
Okay.
The Witch has jumped from 120 to number 76.
Okay.
Better Watch Out, the Christmas movie, has jumped from 181 to 103.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? That one?
Yeah.
I mean, that one's, don't get me wrong, that one's fun, but yikes.
The Dead Zone has jumped from 133 to 105. Another big drop, Alien, which has previously been the number one movie on the list. Most recently was number 3, is now number 53.
Oh, jeez.
Eraserhead has dropped from 96 to 126. Tremors has jumped up from 154 to 106. Jaws has dropped from number 1 to number 13.
Wow.
Yeah. The one change that I'm a little bit pissed off about is Grindhouse has been removed, but Planet Terror is still there. So,
great.
Yeah, so that I feel like that's kind of cheating to me.
Yeah, why not?
A lot of them have moved up. Ginger Snaps has moved up. Girl Walks Home Alone has moved up. So like pretty much every single movie. Thankfully, some movies are still removed. Phantasm, still not on the list.
Great.
Very happy about that.
Yes.
And The Shining, which had previously been our median... what's the word? Control movie.
Yeah.
Because
yes,
it started
yes.
out as number 101. Uh-huh. It's now down to number 148.
Jeez.
And I think also Texas Chainsaw Massacre has dropped from 94 to 149. I don't know.
I'm never going to be happy with this list.
No.
And not even in a way of like, well, I clearly have different tastes than somebody, but I can understand why this is this. There are some things on this that are just never going to make any sort of sense to me.
Yeah. At least it keeps things interesting, right?
Yeah.
So our top 10 as of right now, this the year of our Lord, 2025, is going from number 10 to number 1. We've got Vampyr from 1932, Bride of Frankenstein, The Loved Ones, which is a movie I know of but have never seen.
I don't even think I've heard of that one.
Going to go out on a limb and say it is not the number 8 best horror movie of all time. Host,
Jeez.
Let the Right One In, Babadook, Get Out, holding strong at number 4.
I mean, sure.
The Wailing, which I'm not familiar with. Under the Shadow, I'm also not familiar with. I think The Wailing is a Korean movie.
Yeah, I think so.
Under the Shadow looks, I'm going to, Iran, I believe.
Oh.
And number 1 is a movie called His House, which is, I believe, in South Sudan, it looks like.
That's one that I feel like should go the way of Late Night with the Devil,
yeah.
Where when it came out, I remember hearing a lot of people talking about it. But it seemed very much like of its time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like one of those movies, when it comes out, it people get excited about it and it drums up a lot of interest. But it's not a movie that's going to become like a pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah. It currently has a 100% Rotten Tomato score.
Damn.
But a 72% audience score.
Mm.
So I don't know. We'll get there eventually. I'm a little bit disappointed that we haven't been able to do. I was hoping we'd be able to do the number one movie like 4 times.
Yeah.
But I think Psycho had been number one for a bit, but when we did it, I think it had moved. Alien had moved by that point.
Jaws too, right?
Jaws. Well, yeah. Jaws we did as
number one.
That's the only one so far we've done as number one. But anyway,
yes.
The list continues to be frustrating and weird.
Yes.
But thank you guys for listening and bearing with us. If you'd like to help support the show, follow us on Patreon, where we're doing remakes and reboots, over at patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show.
Thanks.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
We'll see you next time in the bowels of the French Opera House in Paris.
Au revoir.